Rough Trade is giving away a third of the first 3 months of the Rough Trade Club plus new music membership exclusively to 101 Part-Time Jobs listeners. Become a member of Rough Trade Club New Music and you'll receive the Rough Trade Album of the Month straight to your door every month on an exclusive vinyl pressing with bonus material. Club members have received exclusive pressings of albums from Sufjan Stevens, Sprints, The Last Dinner Party, English Teacher, and Over Mono, just to name a few, this past year alone. Sign up using the promo code CLUB101POD and you'll get Rough Trade's Album of the Month, Camera Obscura's Look to the East, Look to the West, for a third of the usual price. By signing up, you'll be getting Rough Trade's exclusive issue of the album on opaque purple in a gatefold sleeve, plus a bonus CD containing 5 demos. Don't want the album of the month but still want all the benefits? Sign up to the standard tier using CLUB101POD and you'll still get the first month free. You'll also get free shipping on all orders, 10% off at the bar and on secondhand vinyl in store, and exclusive access to sold out Rough Trade events. So don't hang around. Head to roughtrade.com/club and sign up with the code CLUB101POD. That's CLUB101POD and claim money off Rough Trade's Album of the Month today. This offer is for UK residents only. Do you play in bands? I did for the longest time, and I wish that I knew that DistroKid was a thing. I don't even think it existed back then. DistroKid makes music distribution fun and easy with unlimited uploads, and artists keep 100% of your royalties and earnings. 1 million+ artists rely on DistroKid to get their music on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram, and all the major streaming services. When you get DistroKid, you can see a DistroKid bank and withdraw your earnings. You get notified when you've earned royalties and you can withdraw via the app. And you can even check your streaming stats on Spotify and Apple. Get 30% off your first year on DistroKid by going to distrokid.com/VIP/101pod. 30% off for your first year. That's not bad. We know it's a tough world out there. Why don't you make it easier for yourself? And to get 30% off that free year as an artist, where you get 100% of your royalties and earnings, go to distrokid.com/VIP/101pod. All right, stay with me. I'll be right back after this.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Right, you're listening to 101 Part-Time Jobs, the best music podcast in the world. On today's episode, we got the singer of the world's greatest rock and roll band, Howlin' Pelle, The Hives, returning after 10 years away with their new album, The Death of Randy Fitzsimmons. There's a great story in that their manager, songwriter Randy Fitzsimmons, went missing. They found his grave with no body inside, but some demo tapes. Those are the demos to this new album. 12 tracks of blistering rock and roll. The Hives are the band we had no idea we missed so much. If you went to go see Arctic Monkeys a couple of weeks ago, you may have seen The Hives open up for them and basically baptize an audience that wasn't really suspecting it. And it was in that moment for me, I thought, wow, I think this is one of the greatest bands in the world. So, Howlin' Pelle comes on 101 Part-Time Jobs today. Cheers for listening. If you like this show, please take a second to click subscribe. and leave it 5 stars on Apple or Spotify, wherever you're listening to it. Takes 2 seconds to do and helps out the show massively. It means we can keep on bringing more guests, more interesting folk, more excellent stories to you. Anything you could do there would be massively, massively appreciated. Thank you, and 5 stars only, please. Here's Howlin' Pele from The Hives. Their new album, The Death of Randy Fitzsimmons, is out on the 11th of August. Here on 101 Part-Time Jobs. It's an enigma, wrapped in a riddle. Being a band, there is 101 jobs that goes behind it. I mean, do you get what I'm saying? That there's kind of...
I feel like my experience is you got to do all that stuff. Like, you can hire people to do shit for you, but you're also going to have to do it yourself. I don't think it's... It might just be paranoia, but it's probably justified paranoia from having been in, the music business for... I guess I've been in the band for 30 years, and the band has been in the music business for 20 years. But there's a lot of stuff you got to keep track of. It's like a lot of kind of running a business and organizational things. And, you got to kind of be able to be the tour manager. You got to kind of be able to be the roadie. You got to kind of be able to be the manager. You got to kind of be able to do everybody else's job as well as your own.
Yeah.
And I just don't see many people who just sing faring well. You know what I mean? We're into doing this, and we're into if it's going to work as well as you can. We got to be kind of have our fingers in every pot, and we don't mind. It's interesting, learning different things, new skills, but yeah. Like in the rock and roll universe, kind of.
And you grew up in punk rock communities and releasing records on Burning Heart and having these punk bands and doing things yourself and having your own ideas and following through. I imagine when you reflect now, that's probably a good training ground, probably a good period of time where you learned how to do your shit.
Yeah, I think that also, the fact that, compared to, the other bands that kind of broke through at the same time as us, we had, 7 years before that of running shit ourselves and failing and succeeding and all that kind of thing. So, and that was a really good school for, and success actually came. We were pretty confident that, we could run this ourselves on some level. We already had something that supported us that we built ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think also when we then later signed to major labels, they knew too. So they were actually pretty respectful of that, maybe more so than a bunch of the so-called punk labels we were on. The major labels were more actually you did this yourself and we wouldn't have done it better. So we're just going to give you this money and let you kind of rip,
right.
Do whatever you want.
Yeah.
So I think that I think that was really important, that training ground. It's why we're still being able to do it. And also we weren't too fussed with your new record did slightly worse than the old one, or that's kind of not. I remember us talking to other bands who were our label dropped us, so now we gotta quit. What the fuck are you talking about? Those things are not connected at all. If the only reason you're doing it is because you got a record deal, why are you even doing it?
Getting signed now doesn't really mean exactly the same kind of one to the next step as it did 15, 20 years ago. I wonder now this is the lesson that artists are learning. It's a very positive message that as individuals and as artists, that you make your own agency.
Yeah, I think if you can do that, there are great artists that were really shit at the other end of it. They were shit at the business side and, I don't know exactly all the ins and outs of it, but, famously Elvis was kind of, didn't deal a lot with the business side, maybe. Yeah, I think everybody's gotten ripped off at some point. And the people who didn't get ripped off, they feel like they were ripped off.
Right.
a lot of people are we should be so much bigger, man. Really?
Have you gone through?
You think there's some cosmic justice to this or something?
Have you gone through your own kind of ups and downs with that? I mean, look, you're Howlin' Pele, but you're also, you're a human with feelings, and sometimes we go through stages where.
No, I'm not. I'm just kidding.
But we go through stages of maybe self-doubt, or you go through ups and downs all the time. What's your way of dealing with the downsides of that? What gets you through the troughs?
I just have a feeling this is what I should be doing, no matter kind of what level of popularity or whatever. I'd like for this band to do well, because I think it's more fun that way. And I think it it fits this band kind of ideologically to be big. Like it fits the all the bragging and ego and shit. I think the band needs to be kind of big for that to work for me. I found what I'm good at pretty early in life, and that's what I want to be doing. You know, like it's kind of like a almost feels like a higher purpose. Like I'm not a religious man or anything, but it feels like this just is what I should be doing. You know, that there's like Japanese concept of ikigai. Do you know what that is?
No.
It's this, it's kind of like a Japanese way of figuring out what you should be doing. And it's like the intersection of what people like what you do, what you like to do, what you can get paid for, and what you're good at, and what society benefits from. And I think for me, like, I guess I kind of nailed that early on, like that this is it for me. Like
every job that I've had, that it seems like I've like had a huge amount of resistance to it, because at an early age, I got paid a little bit for playing a bit of music, never enough to live off it or never enough to pay rent or move out. But I've always kind of had that duality of I like playing music, and that's also right. I like writing about music and doing this podcast, which I'm trying to make. It's almost my job now, nearly. But on the other side,
congratulations.
Thank you. Cheers, mate. And on the other side has always been this kind of absolute resistance. And I feel like I've been disloyal to myself by even spending time doing something that I didn't think I should do. And that's quite an interesting conversation with friends or girlfriends or partners or family sometimes, because it can come across entitled. But it's not. It's just I'm kind of trying to listen to myself the most I can.
Yeah, you're like, I mean, you're entitled. It's your life. You got to decide on your own. And that's scary, though. But you got to decide on your own what you want to do. And not, you know, it's, but there are costs. I mean, I was kind of born a rebel in a weird way. Like my brother was not the same way. Like when I was a kid, I was against everything I should be doing all the time. And it was fucking exhausting. Like I didn't want to go to school. I didn't want to go where people told me what to go. If somebody said go right, I always had to go left. And that's how I spent like my first 15 years. And it may sound like something I'm definitely not romanticizing it, because it's fucking difficult and it costs a lot. Like it requires a lot of energy, but I guess I was following some sort of conviction. But when you read stories about people who follow their convictions and stuff, it sounds like it's like, oh, so I'm so jealous of you because you know what you should be doing. And like, I wish I didn't know what I should be doing. That would make my life so much easier if I was just like, I'll just get a job and, you know, have a normal life in suburbia or whatever, because that's kind of what was handed to me. And doing everything else, which is what I've been doing, has been hard, you know, also. I mean, it's easier now because I can show up and play rock and roll and get paid for it. But there was a long stretch where it was fucking torture to not ever wanting to do anything that I should be doing.
What kind of torture was that? Was that trial and error of, you know, following that conviction and following those feelings that you have, but still feeling like maybe it should be wrong? Is that what you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about like you end up with alone. Like everybody wants to go a certain way, like follow the stream and, you know, all this stuff, like, you're going to root for this football team. You're going to live in this neighborhood. You're going to do all this fucking stuff. And I never wanted to take part in any of it. And it's exhausting because like you can still feel people wanting you to do stuff, but you just ignore it. But you can't ignore it. There's like an energy being drained out of you by people's expectations, I guess. So I was trying to like maneuver that fact that I had a really strong will to do anything but sensible stuff is what I'm talking about. That was difficult.
Seeing you perform, hearing your records, by being that person, you allow us to be that person as well.
That's really beautiful. Thank you, man. I just started thinking about myself as a kid.
Yeah.
And how much of a, like, how much I was, didn't fit in. Like I, you know, kind of was a misfit, didn't work in the society that was like that I grew up in, because Sweden is very like tall poppy syndrome, like especially like rural Sweden. I fucking hated living there because like there was so much stuff that was like, this is what we do here and you should be doing the same thing. And I always felt out of place, you know. Once, you know, you get to a certain age and you find something, you find your little niche. I feel like I'm so good at the thing I do, the weird little niche rock and roll frontman thing that I do, that I don't give a shit if I can fix a car or play a hockey game. Yeah. Like, I only have to be good at one thing. And that kind of gave me all my confidence back, I think.
Trapdoor Solution. I was lucky enough to hear a private stream of the record, and Trapdoor Solution just gave me that same feeling. When I was younger, I was really obsessed with local bands. It doesn't matter who it was. Local bands were the most interesting thing to me. Trapdoor Solution has that energy that still is kind of alight in me. And I love it. I mean, I love that kind of short punk rock and roll feel. It's sound. It's amazing. It's so good.
Thank you, man. Yeah, I like it too. It's cool. It's a pretty great song. Nicholas always says, like, yeah, that thing, he's like talking about when we recorded Trapdoor Solution. He's like, yeah, that thing that is, I don't know if anybody needs it or wants it, but we're the best in the world at that. It's like that fucking 1 minute song. Like, yeah, no one, you know, super fast hi-hat playing and all that stuff. Like,
yeah.
So, you know, I'm going to, and maybe we are, you know, it's kind of like being the best at like, the best Westerner at like Inca arts and crafts. You know, I don't know if anybody needs it, but it's pretty awesome that we're so good at it.
Taking that time off, what did you get up to during that time? What filled your mind? What did you do with yourself during those years, apart from touring?
I wrote a memoir, went into politics, you know. No, I mean, it was mostly just a weird limbo, I think. Did a million things, but like, 10 years is a long time to sum up. It's really hard to even kind of remember what I did. And I didn't like it. I mean, I think the pandemic was like where we really realized that, like, because we were, you know, having not put out a record for such a long time and kind of like waddling about playing the same old songs and all that stuff. Like, the songs are still great. We like playing them, but it feels like there's something missing if you're a band playing shows but not putting out new music. Like, it was not good for us. It didn't feel good, and I didn't like it much, and which ended up us kind of not really liking each other and like this whole weird thing. But it feels like the key to getting back to going again is the fact that there's new music. Like, that changes the whole picture of it, you know. I can't remember what your question was. What did I do? No hives. Went to bed, no hives, was bummed, you know.
I feel like life has its waves, right? When I was 28, I got fired from my job and I went on the dole, and it felt like, I remember that day I rang up my friend and cried down the phone to him, and I was like, fuck, I feel like I'm hit like rock bottom or some shit like that. And I realized later that day, but that was like the best thing that had happened. And then, you know, the next following month,
because it was a job you didn't like.
Well, that, but also it made me like face myself. You know, sometimes you really got to fucking face yourself, and that's very difficult. That's personal growth, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like that happens to people about 4 or 5 times in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this past period with the hives have definitely been that. We've all had to kind of face each other and ourselves before making this album.
Yeah.
And figuring out kind of a new relationship to each other as a result of it, which is, you know, less attached at the hip, which we used to be. Like, we used to kind of live together, always tour together, you know, talk about everything together, constantly be in each other's faces all the time. And it's kind of not, if we want to keep this going, we have to be a bit more separate and be kind of a bit more, you know, we're attached at the hip when we're on tour, but then when we go home nowadays, we live in different cities. Even you got to realize that, like, this is best in small doses.
You talked in the past about a big inspiration or a big fuel behind the hives is comedy and comedians like Andy Kaufman.
I don't know. Like, I think it's more of a subconscious thing. Like, I'm interested in that kind of comedy where it hurts, in the same way I'm interested in music where it's like entertaining, but it also hurts. I think that's kind of my favorite thing. Like, you know, I love this, but I shouldn't, or like all those kind of conflicting feelings. Like,
yeah.
And the same with, like, if I have a couple of beers, we have the scale of like how many beers until you like. Yeah, like if I'm completely sober, Born to Be Wild by Steppenwolf is like a 3 out of 5. But if I drink like a six pack of beers, it's definitely a 5 out of 5. It's corny and it's all this, you know, it's kind of corny. But it's also like, if you let your reptile brain run a little bit more, then that's exactly what it wants, kind of. The same with like comedy. It's like, for like the Hives, there's that the kind of push and pull with the audience. Like we love fucking with them a little bit, but we also actually genuinely love them because they're there. And, you know, that's the reason we get to do what we're doing. But that, I guess that's like the Andy Kaufman thing where it's like, is it even funny or does it just hurt? I'm not sure anymore. Like, is this even comedy anymore?
My favorite band to drink beers to were Guided by Voices. And I was kind of a late person to get onto Guided by Voices. Who's your favorite band to drink beers to? When you go around a friend's house, who are you listening to?
Well, I guess like the cliche of that beer scale that we had was that it was like, it was ZZ Top. Like, well, you know, 80s ZZ Top is good if you're drinking beer. Guided by Voices. Yeah, I never really listened to Guided by Voices much. But the guy in Guided by Voices, they had some reunion and he made a big stink about talking shit about the Hives.
Really?
So they're dead to me.
Robert Pollard talking shit on the Hives. Why?
Well, because he's obviously has shit taste.
You've got, listening
it's
to your-
It's him and what's the other guy, the fucking cry while I wank? Mark Koselec from Red House Painters.
Okay,
those are the only two complainers that I know of.
I feel like death of Randy Fitzsimmons, it makes me want to smoke and drink and get on my bicycle.
Sounds good. Sounds like enjoying life to me. And if we can help out with that, like, I'm fucking happy.
Big time.
That doesn't happen when you're listening to Red House Painters, does it?
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
When I'm at work and I call my bluff and I just want to get out. I'm tight, am I right? I just might prepare for the drought. Let me go on. Every day I'm out on the slog. Let me go on. 101 part-time jobs.
Staying true to the name of the podcast a little bit, did you ever have any teenage jobs, any teenage side hustles where you got pretty smart about making some Yankee dollar early on?
We didn't become professional that early. Like, we started the band early, but we weren't making money when we were like 13 playing in the Hives. That happened way later. So there was definitely a time when we'd get a tour, we would quit our jobs, go on tour, come back home, have to find a place to live and a job. And that would last for like 3 months. Then we'd get a new tour. Then we'd have to quit the job and move out of the apartment. Like, there was a lot of that, like hand to mouth kind of living. Mm. And apart from that, I guess like the jobs I had, I was a mailman, which gave me awesome buttocks. I was a mailman. I was handing out newspapers. Like, those were the main gigs, which, you know, made me very like, the cardio was great. And also the fact that you'd end work at like noon or something and you could fuck around with rock songs or whatever. And then I was also working at a convention center, making signs for all the convention, whatever the, for the different conventions and stuff. I was doing that while we were making Veni Vidi Vicious.
What kind of
signs?
Well,
you know, like it was different. It was like, maybe there's a boat convention going on and I had to make signs that said like Riva or whatever the boat manufacturer was. And they'd put those signs up to, you know, like to make people buy their boats, or it would be like a medical conference or with whatever it was. I made the signs for all that stuff, which was on cardboard, and you would glue, you had like a printer that would cut out plastic strips and then you'd put it on the cardboard to make a sign.
Great.
And that was really great job for like, we made like bass drum heads for the Hives and we made like all sorts of decorations for the Hives and stuff. So that very, it was a good job to have. Like, you could make your stage show a lot better.
Yeah, and just thinking that must have had an impact on the way that you saw the whole visual show of the hives, because you're looking at it from a design point of view. I don't think artists do that.
No, I think for the time when we were starting out too, it was so easy to make a splash, like showbiz wise, at like the punk clubs we were playing and stuff, because it was considered so wrong in like the punk scene at the time, or like the indie scene or whatever, Guided by Voices scene, which is like, the less it's showbiz, the more people would think it was real. But we were kind of into like, what if we fuck with that? Like wear suits and play to 9 people and make a big fucking light bulb sign with our name on, just make a big fucking spectacle of ourselves.
Yeah.
That seemed more interesting to us. So that's what we did. I don't know if that came from that. I think that was always a part of the Hives, even before I worked at making signs at the convention center and stuff. But I think I always, like when I was a kid, I always wanted a job where I would have my brain to myself. And I think that's what attracted me to the postman job, because it was very physical and you could think about whatever you wanted, as opposed to like working in corporate finance when your brain gets tired, but your body doesn't. Like if you got a job that makes your body tired, but you can use your brain for creative things, it was awesome for the Hives. Like you'd come up with great ideas, just like, because you know your brain works better if there's some blood flow in your body. So
yeah
did you and make- I always wanted a job that I didn't bring home with me, like there would never be homework, but I fucked up that royalty, like being in the Hives, like I'm constantly thinking about it, but I'm never going to work, but I'm constantly thinking about it, so fuck that up. But I did a lot of other things right.
How did you talk about fuck ups? I'm a big fan of hearing people's stories of fucking up at work. I fucked up at every job I've ever had. I was a tour guide last summer with no formal education to do it. And I was just taking these 30 teenagers around London, and I lost a few of them on the tube, and we just lost all the day's work that their parents had paid for trying to find these kids. And I just, you know, in the day that sucks. And I used to work at a radio station doing the adverts, and quite often I would get the dates wrong. So I'd be telling you, the radio station would be telling you things are on the wrong day. What kind of, I'm putting you on the spot here a little bit, but do any kind of funny mistakes that you've made come to mind?
Well, I think that it was the convention center thing that ended kind of when we finished Venue de Vicious, because it was so obvious that like they were kind of, the other people that worked there were kind of like a cult. Like, oh, we got a big convention coming up on Monday. Everybody's got to work the whole weekend. And I was like, I'm not doing that. And kind of that they thought I was what's the word I'm looking for, that was they didn't think I had any solidarity in me. But I was like, well, you know, your solidarity is with your boss, not with each other. Like you're only helping your boss by working overtime all weekend or whatever, not paying you extra. And I was busy doing, you know, what I wanted to do, which was the Hives. So that kind of ended with them saying, you know, I was basically quitting at the same time as they were firing me. So there was like some kind of weird conversation. Like, he's like, oh yeah, we don't, yeah, it's hard to say, but we don't really think you should be working here anymore. And I kind of said like, no, that's perfect. I don't want to either. Like, that's great. And then they got disappointed. I was more disappointed, I think. And it's kind of the same thing that's happened every time I've been thrown out of a bar. A security person will go up to me and say like, oh, I think it's time you should leave. And I was like, and I'll always be like, I always feel like they're right, you know? That's a great idea. Yeah, I'm way too drunk to be here. I should go home. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I cannot imagine.
It always confuses people when you don't resist.
I cannot imagine you getting into a fight.
I have a bunch of times. I think my stats are still positive. Like, I won more than I've lost, but it's barely. But yeah, it's been a very long time. I'm an adult, upstanding member of society, paying taxes and all that stuff. So I got to be pretty fucked up to be in a fight in your 40s, I think. But yeah, the fighting I did was a long time ago. And usually because I looked wrong or someone, I get attacked coming out of the subway by like football hooligans and stuff like that.
Right. Is that in your local, was that in your sort of where you grew up, or is that more in Stockholm?
I never was in a fight in my hometown, but as soon as I'd leave, like we'd go even like 30 kilometers away and party or whatever, you'd get in a fight. Or this particular thing I'm thinking about was in Stockholm, like just getting out of the subway. And they must have just said, like, the next person got on the subway, we're going to attack him.
Wow, yeah.
And they tried to smash a bottle on my head and kind of missed. And they were so drunk that I could kind of easily beat them up. But whatever. I mean, it's not something I hate fighting. I don't like it at all. But, you know, you got to kind of defend yourself if you end up in that spot. But what I think, I mean, if you can just run away, that's better. Just fucking run. Like, nobody needs to be in a fight because it's actually really, it's a lot more dangerous than you think.
But as soon as the conversation about fighting comes up, there's always a few guys who are like, I'm fucking tough. I'm tough. I'm tough.
Yeah. And that's you're fucking also fucking
like,
stupid.
You're like, shut up. Shut up. I had a friend growing up who, it's not very politically correct, but because we had mohawks and leather jackets and denim jackets, that we used to be the target quite regularly from people looking for a fight. You know, we were like 16. You know, what do you want from me? And
yeah, I remember that. The same thing with me. It was about how I looked and people wanted to fight me based on that.
Our friend used to act like he, you know, he'd start like spasming and like having like falling to the floor, and that would get us out of the fight. So
pretty good.
Got to do what you can do.
I mean, I learned later on to look like I can fight. To look like calm and collected and just look at them and wait till they make a move. And that usually will diffuse someone who wants to fight.
Yeah.
Like if you're agitated and like excited and or nervous or something, but if you just look at them calmly, like you're interested, that'll usually stop the fight. If you can sell it well enough.
It's diffusing. That's the one, isn't it?
De-escalating, I think that's the police term.
Hey, Pelle, thank you so much for being up for this. I've been a fan.
No worries, man. It was really fun. That's awesome.
It's cool, you know, and it's so brilliant to be just reminded of like the rock and roll spirit of other people, but also of yourself. And that's what I'm really getting from the new record. So thank you for that.
I'm really happy that it made you feel good. Then my job is done.
Just to end with, one of my favorite stories about the Hives is how Alan McGee of Creation Records saw you play on German TV when he was staying at a hotel abroad. Do you remember that kind of communication that you had with Alan McGee and Creation Records? Because obviously, you know, well, Creation Records being the home of Oasis and the start of that really hyped Britpop era where there was this amazing music and amazing experiences happening.
Britpop was kind of over when he signed us, and it wasn't Creation Records. It was his later venture called Pop Tones.
I see.
Where he was trying to kind of get away from everything he's signing being a big thing by releasing like a million records, you know, so it wasn't like, Alan McGee's new band is this, Alan McGee's new band's that. So he started Pop Tones and released a bunch of like a lot of reissues and a lot of records. I think just to get some of the pressure, that godlike pressure of himself, called the label. And he's like, we got to sign this band. Bass player's mental. He's got a mustache. I don't know what the fuck it was. I did like more of a Scouser than a Scottish there. But I think that was his thing. Like some of these people definitely have like a real ear for when someone is good. And Alan is one of those people. And he was right, you know, he was pretty impressive at the time. I mean, it was during a time when I guess the music industry made a little bit more sense. So it was easier to, but he would like, oh, if you do this TV show, you're going to sell 50,000 records. And we did. They're like, really? Okay. So we did. And then we did like the next week.
And then it's like,
if you do
pops.
This TV show, you're going to sell 100,000 records. And then we did. And then we sold 100,000 records. Like he would always be right about the stats and stuff, which made it seem like a kind of a God given power to us. But yeah, we had so much fun with that man. I fucking love him.
And that was Top of the Pops.
I can't remember which was first. It was like some show with Joe Wiley, and it was Top of the Pops, and it was like Jules Holland.
Yeah.
And we did a lot of English TV for a while there.
Brilliant. Do you remember coming over for the first time? Because you've talked about how the UK is one of those places that people get you here. Do you remember coming over for the first time and that making sense?
Well, I think the first time we came over, we were so unpopular, or like nobody knew who we were. And we were supporting a band called the Yo-Yos. And I remember coming to the first venue and how badly you're treated as like a young band in the UK compared to like a Germany or something. I had a cold and I asked, like, we were playing some pub or whatever. And our dressing room was like a hallway, and we had to split four beers on five people. And I asked for a cup of tea and they asked me for a pound. And we got like one towel for the whole band and stuff like that. And then when I asked it, I'm like, that's kind of fucked up. Like, you know, it's not that hard to give us several towels. And then he went on some long rant that we should be happy and play in a country that where the Beatles came from. And that was kind of always the attitude we got in the beginning. So like when you're a popular band in the UK, it's fucking great touring there. But it used to be pretty terrible when you were not. Like they'd think it was a hobby or whatever.
Yeah, that's the way it goes. The first time we went to Germany and we got a room with beds and drinks and a shower, it was like, oh my, and a dinner, hot food. Hot food's the one.
Yeah, pretty nice, isn't it?
Hey, Pelle, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you very much. Good luck with the podcast and life, and see you some other time. Thanks.
Yeah, you too. See you later. So there was Howlin' Pelle. A great chat here on 101 Part-Time Jobs. Thank you so much for listening. I do episodes every Tuesday and Thursday, so make sure you subscribe to get notified when those come out. This Thursday will be the live episode I did with Hack Baker a couple of weeks ago at a sold-out Strong Room in Shoreditch. So make sure you tune into that. If you're able to give this show a favorable rating, wherever you're listening to it, most likely Apple or Spotify, please do. Blustering and gushing reviews I will also accept. Thank you so much for listening and see you again. Cheers.
It is Ryan here and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.